The purpose of Retire with Style is to help you discover the retirement income plan that is right for you. The first step is to discover your retirement income personality. Start by going to risaprofile.com/style and sign up to take the industry's first financial personality tool for retirement planning. While learning is optional, our commitment to having a good time is not. Welcome our hosts, Wayne and Alex.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast here, Retire with Style. I'm Alex Murguia and I'm here with...
Wade Fow, and we're happy to join or have you join us for the fourth episode of this series.
Awesome. And just to give a quick recap, I think... This is sort of a continuation over the last episode. In the last episode, we really started talking about, you know, a specific retirement income belief, and that was probability-based safety first. Wade, you want to give us a quick recap of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking about these two sets of core preferences, and last time we talked about probability-based safety first. Probability-based being, I'm comfortable relying on this idea of market growth, that it doesn't necessarily have to be the stock market, but something that gives you the opportunity for upside above and beyond the quote unquote risk-free type return you might get from a simple like bond allocation. And then safety first, to contrast that, is I'm not necessarily comfortable relying on the market growth. I'd really prefer some sort of contractual protection to support what I'm doing, whether that means using individual bonds, whether that means using a contract through annuity that can support some protected income. But I want something that has some element of contractual protections. I don't want to have to rely entirely on the idea that the stock market or other growth assets will outperform and support a higher level of spending than I could get with bonds alone.
Yeah, and so... Well, this is one of the key distinct retirement income beliefs that we discovered in our investigation. There's another one that's just as distinct, as probability safety first, and that one is optionality versus a commitment orientation. It complements probability safety first extremely well, and putting these together helps you do a lot of interesting things when deciding on a retirement income strategy that will flesh out in future episodes, and we'll begin to talk about it towards the end of this one. But you know, before we get that, let's just go into what exactly is optionality commitment orientation, whereas probability safety first kind of may require some thinking with regards to financial planning concepts. Optionality and commitment orientation, frankly, is more of a just commonsensical term. Wouldn't you say, Wade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something I never really thought of as a distinct retirement factor. I mean, I had named the two schools of thought, probability based and safety first, so that was very much at the forefront of my thinking, but never really thought this idea about, do I prefer optionality or do I prefer committing to something that I know will work, as being a highly relevant or important factor to actually keep in mind. And we let the data tell us what's important, and the data told us that this idea of optionality versus commitment is extremely important to understanding retirement preferences. So yeah. Alex, what does optionality mean? And I mean, at some level, everyone wants optionality, but what does that mean in the context of a trade-off that you can...
And that's important. Think about this in the construct of trade-offs. And this is where I don't think we intended to do this initially, but this is how it's formed itself, where there's this great blend of psychological constructs, but they're married to these financial planning constructs as well. And they're presented as trade-offs. And so, you know, it really is beginning to bridge these two fields quite nicely in this practical manner. And in that regard, optionality, the way we view it here, is I don't want to commit to a retirement income strategy if it removes my ability to revisit it in a significant manner for X number of years, whatever time horizon you say, 5 years, 10 years, or for the rest of my life. And why wouldn't you want to do that? There's this, you know, there's this feeling that, hey, my situation may improve and it'll allow me to do something that's more beneficial, or the economic environment may improve and it may allow a better opportunity set. Right. And so that's the thinking of optionality. It's just one of these things where there's this uncertainty. You can even say it's an uncertainty aversion, you know, to a large extent. You don't want to lock in on something in case there's a better opportunity at some future. And just to continue the momentum way, commitment orientation is ultimately the flip side of that coin, right? Which is, I really don't mind locking in on a strategy if it solves a lifetime issue for me that I don't have to revisit. So you can see why, from a retirement income strategy perspective, that could be appealing to most. Yes, I'm fully aware that things may get better and will allow me to do X, Y, Z more than now. But by the same token, things may not get better and they may get worse. And so by locking in now, I'm good with that. So, but it doesn't have to be that pessimistic, are you a glass half full or glass half empty person? It could also entail that, hey, if I can solve this solution for the rest of my life, you know, for the rest of my retirement, that's very valuable to me. That's very valuable to me because it allows me to amplify other areas of my life that I couldn't before, because I would always have this concern that I need to be mindful of. And so there's that kind of nuance there. It's not simply locking in, not locking in because optimistic, pessimistic. It's more, it opens up a lot more things in the other areas. And this is where Wade's point about liquidity that he may get into comes into play. Now, why did we come up with this? And Wade is saying, you know, it's kind of one of these these constructs that may not be as intuitive at the beginning as opposed to other more quote unquote financial planning oriented items. One of the reasons is because you can make a very, that made us think in this way is, you could present annuities or contractual sort of solution sets to folks and they rationally can see it. In the same way that people, you know, tilt towards the markets because they rationally believe in the time diversification argument, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's the same thing. You know, people can acknowledge, okay, I get it. There's a huge benefit of locking in on something that solves for my retirement income. But even after all of that, you hear a lot of, yeah, but I don't want to do it. You know, this sort of, yeah, but. If you find yourself kind of answering these comments with, yeah, but I don't know. And that, to me, that's that optionality commitment orientation kicking in. That's my non-scientific answer of what that is, the yeah, buts, if you will. And you see this in practical just meetings with folks, or comments that we receive. Yeah, I get the whole annuity thing. I get the whole contractual income, but it's not me. Wade, you want to take it from there?
Yeah, that's ultimately what it gets at, is you can see the value in something, but ultimately you prefer to keep your options open. And I think another element of commitment is you can check it off your to-do list. And does that provide the comfort? Again, it's this idea of, here's a solution that I know will work and I don't have to worry about it anymore. If that's appealing, that's a commitment orientation. If it's, no, I don't want to lock in, I just want to keep the flexibility to do whatever I want to do in the future and I don't mind revisiting it, that's optionality in practice. And so that's ultimately what we're talking about here. And it's how you feel about those trade-offs that then define where you stand on this scale of, are you optionality oriented or are you commitment oriented? And Alex, maybe it makes sense to go back to, as we've talked about in the past, We started with a pool of 900 questions. We narrowed it down from there to get into the questions that we thought really are going to work best, or that the data tells us work best, I should say. But drawing from some of the questions that aren't part of that final list. So Alex, sure. you've got the, again, there's six options. Are you, I'm going to read two statements, statement A on the left, statement B on the right. Are you very strongly identifying with one or the other, or are you somewhere in the middle? You can't choose to be right in the middle. You do have to lean with these six options, one or the other. Like, there's no pure middle option for you. But statement one is, I do not like to commit to a retirement income strategy in case my preferences change. Statement two is, I can commit to a retirement income strategy as long as it will solve a lifetime issue. Which statement do you identify with?
I am personally on the last statement that you said. Not too heavily. I'm probably, let's say, one through six. One being I'm with the first statement completely. Six being I'm with the last statement completely. I'm probably like a four with regards to I can commit to retirement income strategy as long as it will solve for a lifelong issue. For me personally, if I'm looking at it from a essential expenses standpoint, if I can lock that down, you know, once I'm retired, you know, I'm not thinking about this accumulate. I'm not thinking about, you know, growth. The reality is that opportunity for me is right now, right? As I'm working, et cetera. And so I know myself to the extent that once this rolls around, there's a value to me, call it a consumption, whatever, but there's a personal value to me to be able to solve my retirement income for essential expenses. It just provides me a lot of comfort with regards to that. And another thing is I'm married. And when it comes to what you're going to do from a retirement income standpoint, there's a division of labor of responsibilities. Interestingly enough, my wife does all the budgeting and things like that. I couldn't tell you, Wade, how much I spend on electricity a month or anything like that. Whatever my wife says, it's gospel here. But when it comes to the investment side of things, obviously this is something that from a division of labor I go with. And, you know, this provides a lot of comfort. Having this locked in provides a lot of comfort to me and for my wife if something were to happen to me. And the other piece for me that I always worry about is sort of cognitive decline. You know, although many would say that's already upon me, you know, one of these things that, you know, worrying about distribution strategies in my mid-70s, late-70s, 80s, 90s, is not something I want to consider. So to me, there's a lot of value for that. You know, there's a lot of value for me in taking care of things like that. That's where I stand in it. But again, that's my preference. I'll hit you up, Wade. So the first statement, I prefer a flexible retirement income strategy to retirement income consistency. I prefer retirement income consistency to a flexible retirement income strategy.
Yeah. So for me, it's kind of a tough question. At some level, I think I'd go with the consistency. But when I really think about this question, I think I do actually lean more towards the first statement, which is I prefer a flexible retirement income strategy to retirement income consistency. And that's partly, just going through the pandemic and seeing how much less my household spent in 2020 and 2021, it's ultimately this reminder that there is this potential to just spend less without that necessarily disrupting the standard of living, that you can still enjoy life without necessarily spending as much. And so that kind of leads me to question, like, what is the floor? What are my longevity expenses? And I'm not exactly sure. And at least I may want that flexibility for then in some cases spending more in particular years, but also recognizing I don't necessarily have to consistently spend at that high level. And maybe if there's some like big world trip one year, I could spend on half that amount the following year. And just having that flexibility, I think I see value there. So I wouldn't be all the way to the strong answer there. But if preferring flexibility, it would be the one, preferring consistency as a six. Yeah, I'd probably be in the two or three for that one.
Yeah, so think about this. This is a concept here, optionality, commitment, orientation. And Wade and I are at different sides of the middle. And, you know, hopefully no one thinks that Wade is right or I'm wrong or I'm right and Wade is wrong. It's just how we are. And something I alluded to earlier, and Wade didn't get too much into it, but, you know, when, you know, Wade is married, when you have a spouse, it's sort of a group conversation as well to have with regards to things along these lines. Wouldn't you say, Wade?
Well, it is. And what we say about, like, taking the RISA, we do think that for any spouses or partners to both take the RISA separately so that someone's not dominating the conversation. But then it was one of the advisors that we talked to at McLean mentioned after having each person take separately, he also likes to have them then do together as a RISA too and see to get a sense of like maybe which one's the more dominant strategy when you're actually working on it together. And yeah, because if there's differences, then that's a very important conversation is how can we find a strategy that works? If somebody is strong optionality, the other person is strong commitment orientation, how do you then find some sort of compromise so that both set of preferences can at least be respected or have something that offers them comfort with their plan?
No, I think that's 100% right. But this, again, this is what got us about this is that this wasn't necessarily this financial planning construct. Like I said, when we came up with these questions, Wade and I really went through the entire literature as much as we could with regards to retirement income, you know, the journals, the books, et cetera, et cetera. And you start to, shout out to Moshe Malevsky, I will say. And where's the book? I just wanted to leave it there. Zwecker for Retirement Portfolios. You know, they're great, great, great masterworks, I would say, with regards to retirement income. But, you know, and Wade's books, obviously. But you start, yeah, right? Hey, I don't want to forget about you, buddy. Hey, I'm thinking about you, Wade. But, you know, you just start, you know, whenever you read certain turns of phrases or whatever, and you think, oh, okay, this is an interesting concept. Oh, this is an interesting concept. And you just start categorizing them. And at the end of this, we realize, hey, there's something here, Wade, that's like commitment or leaving options open. You know, that was kind of a reoccurring theme. And then when we did the study, you realize, you know, in the pilot, it was actually the most distinct factor. And part of that is because I think it really makes you pick a team, you know, more than the others, you know, as opposed to these other factors. Hey, like accumulation distribution, there's a little bit of safety first probability in it. You follow? Whereas optionality, commitment oriented is distinct. You know, it's almost like this personal proclivity of how you are. You know, it kind of is independent, and it works really well in complement with this optionality, with this probability based safety first that we'll talk about towards the end of this.
Let's take a moment to let the audience know that this show is sponsored by Retirement Researcher. You can learn more about Retirement Researcher at retirementresearcher.com and subscribe to our newsletter, where you'll receive weekly actionable information for your retirement planning benefit. Retirement Researcher is an online community devoted to helping you create the retirement income plan geared towards your goals.
Now, where do people land in general? You know, in our study, we did it. And the mean here, interestingly, is a little lower. And the low score implies optionality. The high score implies commitment orientation, right? And what you find here is that the mean is closer to 3.3. The split is 3.5. It's 1 to 6, so 3.5. Now, it's still somewhat central. There's still a central tendency there. But the reality is it's a little tilted towards people like just naturally like to have optionality as a baseline, if you will, at least some semblance of it, as opposed to being right down the middle. You know, and I just think that's interesting. Now, with regards to in the previous episode, we compared probability base and was it significantly related to longevity concerns and reserves, specifically health and general reserves. And what we found again is that these retirement concerns, these new risks that you face in retirement, longevity and spending shocks, and right now the proxy for these spending shocks is reserves, it was significantly related to how you felt about where you were on the spectrum. Specifically, the more commitment-oriented you were, the more you were concerned about longevity and reserves, like healthcare kind of reserves in general, the more you're willing to commit to a strategy to take that risk off the table. And it makes sense in my view. It makes total sense. If you're concerned about running out of money, outliving your assets in retirement, then it would, you know, intuitively, yeah, okay, you would want a solution that takes that risk off the table and you're willing to solve for it as soon as you can. Wade, thoughts?
Yeah, that's, I think that's very intuitive in terms of you don't need to commit to something if you're not worried about it. But if you are worried about outliving your ability to fund your essential spending, if you are worried about not having resources to cover the unexpected, especially not having resources as well to cover long-term care or healthcare expenses, then if there's a solution that you can commit to and take that concern away and to solve for that problem, I think that is quite intuitive that you'd have that commitment orientation. Whereas if you didn't have those particular concerns, there's no particular need to commit to something. You just keep your optionality. And so I that makes sense to me as well, that if those with an optionality orientation it's not universal, but are less likely to have those concerns about longevity and healthcare and general spending shocks for their retirement plan.
And just to make clear, because again, some of you may be listening and thinking, well, is it really a function of, again, net worth and not this, gender and not this, marital status and not this? These findings were significant even when accounting for gender, net worth, marital status, retirement status, and drum roll. Here, let me do it, Wade, since I got a new little toy. Even when accounting for loss aversion, which again is the foundational tool for risk questionnaires. And so what you're finding is that this is picking up a lot of variability with regards to what folks are experiencing as they enter retirement from the point of view of concerns that they want to take off the table. And so we think that's more than cool. That's progress, right? You do see this wasn't significantly related to lifestyle concerns, which actually fits to what Wade is saying in terms of it, you know, it's, you know, if you have this discretionary level of concerns, that means that longevity and those kind of things are not as primary. There's less primacy for those. And this was also related to different types of retirement income styles that we'll cover in future episodes. But again, this is me teasing something in a poor way. we'll talk about that in future episodes as opposed to just hinting at what these different styles are without getting into them. The other piece that we found is that while everyone is slightly under that 3.5 threshold, meaning that everyone likes to have some semblance of optionality available, males do so less than females. You know, there it was 3.2. Again, it's still above 3, so there's still a nice measure of central tendency on this mean. But here, males are at 3.22 and females are 3.37. So they're, you know, females are more, have a more commitment oriented tilt than males do.
And that's just that. Relative. They're still both relative, on exactly. The optionality side, but probably a better way to say that is just that men are even more optionality oriented.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wade Fowle.
Yes. I don't want to create any confusion there.
Yeah, there you go, Wade. Adding value. No. You're right. Absolutely. Now, what's interesting here, and we want to begin to really flesh out this concept, is what we did in the last one. We talked about probability based versus safety first. And in this one, we got into the details with regards to optionality and commitment orientation. Now, if you put these together, if you put these two spectrums together, you have the foundations of your retirement income style. There are other factors that can play into it, but we see them as complementary, and the next few episodes will flesh those out as well. But with probability versus safety first and optionality and commitment orientation, you now have a strong foundation framework, if you will, to help you identify what your retirement income style is. Wade, you want to maybe, you know, detail that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So with the retirement income style awareness, the matrix that we have in mind, you put these together. So we talked about probability-based safety first. We talk about optionality commitment. And then ultimately, how do you score on each of those two preference sets? And so you could be probability-based and optionality-oriented. You could be safety-first and optionality-oriented. You could be safety-first and commitment-oriented. Or you could be probability-based and commitment-oriented. And also what we see is there is a tendency. So these are distinct factors, but they do have a relationship where if you're more optionality oriented, you also tend to be more probability based on average. If you're more safety first, you also have a tendency to be more commitment oriented as well. And so we see kind of two core combinations here, that optionality oriented probability based group, and then also that commitment oriented safety first group. And then the less natural relationships was still important quadrants within this matrix, the optionality and safety first group, and then the commitment oriented and probability based group. But those are the four different quadrants that we are going to describe as the four core retirement income styles. We'll have a set of secondary characteristics that we can overlay to better tell the story. But 90% of the story is just how do you score with these optionality commitment and probability based safety first.
And now what I would add to this is this really opens, you know, now we have a framework for identifying retirement income styles according to somebody's preferences, which, you know, if you're agnostic about, one is not more right than the other. Everyone's optimizing for their own contextual reason, right? And so if you have this framework, it really opens up your world. And what I'd like to get at here, and I'm gonna try to flesh out, is okay, so if you're optionality oriented and probability based, what are you saying really? You're saying something along the lines of, hey, I believe in market growth to fund sustainable withdrawals. And the optionality piece is I'm willing to kind of play it by ear, if you will, depending on the situation, right? And there'll be greater detail to follow, but this is identifying a specific strategy, if you will, that has to do with sustainable withdrawals from a portfolio. If you take the opposite of that spectrum now, and now we're talking about a commitment orientation, I'm willing to commit to something as long as it solves this lifetime need, and safety first, I'm willing to commit to something that's contractually oriented. You're really talking about pension-like income, if you will, with regards to spending in retirement. And Wade, you know, he alludes to something here that's interesting, and this is the annuity puzzle. There's this thought that, hey, not enough people get an annuity. Why not? Why are they being so irrational about it? You know, when you're retired, it's obvious you should spend relative to the probabilities you're going to be alive. And it's obvious you should do that by getting some sort of structured solution that glides you there. Wade, do you want to maybe detail that a bit more?
Right. Yeah, this is important because I don't know how many times I've heard investment managers make the claim that academics don't like annuities. And nothing could be further from the truth than that, because academics have defined the annuity puzzle, which is It seems like a simple income annuity solves for the lifetime income need. It should be incredibly popular. And why is it that not all that many Americans own an income annuity? So they're looking for an answer to the puzzle. And I think partly we can explain the puzzle, not for the whole population, but there's a segment of the population that has characteristics that describe why they may not be all that interested in owning an annuity. And it's simply that they're comfortable relying on the market growth. They want to keep their options open. An annuity is not going to resonate.
And wait, now I'll take it a step further. I know the answer, but I want to make it clear. Is relying on long-term market growth and maintaining optionality an irrational thought?
No, it's all about your style, and that's where we're agnostic. Like, ultimately, I see the value of annuities, but I also see I see the value of investments, and it's what we want to do is help people find the style that's right for them and not be forced into a style that someone who's very dogmatic about one style is best for everyone may intentionally for them, but may push people into the style that's not really going to be the right style for their retirement plan.
Yeah, and now let's talk some frequencies, right? And if you think about it, we're focusing on just these two subquadrants right now. We'll introduce the other ones in a sec. But okay, you are probability based and optionality oriented. It makes sense, right? It just does. You have this commitment orientation and safety first tilt. That makes sense. It just does. And what we find is that 35% of the population, at least based on the study, and again, this was a national study of folks, you know, 40 and above, etc. 35% fall in that probability optionality quadrant. Another 35% fall in the commitment orientation safety first quadrant. So they're very split evenly with regards to how folks land here. And so this goes back to to think someone's irrational or not rational, or to think someone's right or wrong, to be in one way, to be in one place or the other, is not the way to think about it. Again, in the first episode, we talked about how when you decide what to do professionally and what, you know, how you wanted to source your professional income and the decisions you made with regards to, you know, the types of profession you undertook, you know, had a lot to do with your own personal preferences. I want to be behind a desk running analytics. I want to be in front of the house, you know, interacting with people, making sales. It's just a different personality. And what we're finding is you're seeing this kind of spread very similar. Now, that was 35 and 35. What we also find is those that are emphasizing probability-based but with a commitment orientation, what does that imply at a higher level without getting into the specifics, Wade? What would that subquadrant imply?
Yeah, so if you're probability-based but with a commitment orientation, it's you're comfortable relying on the markets, but you're also comfortable committing to some sort of strategy. And so that's really, you want some sort of guardrail around the markets. You don't necessarily want to stake your entire retirement success on the markets, but you do want the markets to be an important part of your funding mechanism for your retirement goals. And so that can speak to a different set of solutions, but it's one of the core retirement styles that we'll talk about. And Alex is saying not to get into too much depth, so, but that's what it's all about. You're comfortable relying on the markets, but you want to have some sort of guardrail so that you're not overly reliant on the markets.
And on the other side of that subquadrant, you have high optionality and this strong safety first orientation. And if you take a step back and think about what that means, this is effectively, okay, I want contractual income. I want some sort of that safety first of contractual income, but I don't want it as a lifetime floor. You know, I want to have optionality according to whatever time segmentation I want. And that implies a different solution set than being safety first, but being fine with committing to a lifelong strategy, right? And that solution set ultimately is, it's you're getting a reliable income stream from contractual source, but you're tending to revisit that decision every few years, like a bucket, like a bucketing strategy, if you will. And there's many ways to go about doing that. And what we find is, again, high optionality, high probability base, about 35%. High commitment orientation, high safety first, about 35%. And then you see 15 and 15 on the other sides. 15, high probability, high commitment together, and 15%, high optionality, high safety first together. And that's an interesting kind of spread. And we see the spread actually across the different demographic slices. You see this in aggregate, and then you see this across ages. You see this across retirement sort of cohorts, if you will. And it brings to light that you put these retirement styles together, and independently, these styles seem to resemble traits, but these solutions, you know, become consistent. And that's kind of cool. But what's also cool here is, Wade, your comment, and you said this, and I thought, you know, dang it, I think he's got something here. And this is where there are natural correlations to be at the 35% subquadrant and the 35% subquadrant, the other one, with regards to high probability, high optionality, high commitment orientation, high safety first. Those are natural correlations, and they make sense why they run together. Wade, I'll let you take it from there, because I know you know where I'm going with this. What were the other? How do you define the other subquadrants?
Right, and we're kind of jumping ahead to some degree, but there's a behavioral element of this. If you're safety first and optionality oriented, you want contractual protections, but you want to keep your options open. That's not necessarily a natural set of preferences. So there's some behavioral element there. And that's always how those time segmentation and bucketing strategies that can fit into that quadrant are described, that it's not necessarily a better way to invest, but it's something that may resonate with people's thinking. And so you get contractual protections through your bond buckets, and you get optionality through your growth buckets. And conversely as well, if you're probability-based but commitment-oriented, that's not necessarily, like, you usually think if investing in the markets, that's more of an optionality tilt. But the commitment orientation there, for the people who have those preferences, there's a whole host of, like, insurance-related products that have been designed to provide that sort of market exposure, but still offer that ability to commit and to solve for a worst-case scenario type income need with the ability to still participate in the markets. And so, again, it's a behavioral type strategy that's been designed to meet that type of preference set as well.
And I think you're right, Wade, specifically with, I'm getting ahead of myself here. But, yeah, I we find this fascinating, because if you see the progression that we've taken so far, it's, listen, everyone has this retirement income style. Everyone has a way that they want to source retirement income. And I think it's important to have that be your starting point. And when I say I mean, Wade and I, you know, we subscribe to the same philosophy. And so then you have these new risks in retirement. And your profile says a lot on how you want to take those risks off the table. And then we further said, well, if you take probability safety first as, you know, this distinct style factor, and you take optionality and commitment as a distinct style factor, and you put them together, you have a very interesting matrix that is not only able to identify, you know, where kind of the general population lies, but is able to identify, more importantly, where you are in the mix. And that leads to starting points for your strategies. You know, and we kind of hinted at these a little bit right now over the last few minutes, and we'll get into. But I think it's fascinating on a lot of levels. And it's progress with regards to blending, if you will, the psychology and the financial planning together, excuse me, in a manner that we can identify a retirement income personality and marry that to a starting point for analysis. Now, before we really get into unpacking the strategies, I think we should talk about secondary factors that we found as important, you know, not as important, but secondary factors that were important to telling the story. Why? Because some of you may be listening thinking, what about how you view liquidity? What about how you view accumulation, your views on accumulation versus distribution? What about your views on, you know, the pace of the income distributions. Do you front load? Do you back load? Et cetera, et cetera. I think those merit a lot of, you know, a conversation because they complement these styles very well. And we'll talk about those in the upcoming episodes. And then we'll revisit the matrix and really start to talk about strategies. With that, we're getting better at our conclusions. So with that, thank you for listening. Wade, you want to take us home?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, everyone. And we'll catch you in the next episode. Appreciate you continuing with us this many episodes in. We're very grateful that you're here.
Wade and Alex are both principals in McLean Asset Management and retirement researcher. Both are SEC-registered investment advisors located in Tysons, Virginia. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational and educational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific securities. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor. All investing comes with a risk, including risk of loss. Past performance does not guarantee future results.